The Beautiful Game, a podcast from the Compass Network.
Welcome to The Beautiful Game. We've been gone for 2 weeks, but we are back, bigger than better, and we actually now have a Twitter feed as well. You can follow us on the Twitter handle, @soccer_podcast. I'm joined this week by both of our panellists, with Dan Taylor and Pete Gaskell. So we've got a full family here for this week's show.
Game of the week.
It's the Merseyside Derby. It's kind of come out of nowhere, really. There's not been any great hype going into it because of the international break, but it's going to be Everton against Liverpool. I think it's the 12:45 kickoff on BT Sport this weekend. I'll be plugging BT Sport this week after accusations of showing favouritism towards Sky Sports on the last podcast. Right, let's jump to you, Pete. Everton, they haven't won in the last two games, and they're not really scoring many goals. What's going wrong? Because it started so well for them.
I think in that case, it's because Lukaku has stopped scoring goals. Isn't it? That's why Everton's not been scoring. What, overall, I don't think they've played any worse than they have before.
0-0 against Crystal Palace.
Apart from that, generally speaking, they've stayed pretty consistent. The defence is as rock solid as ever. I think the scoring is dependent mainly on Lukaku, and if he doesn't score, they'll be a struggle. And I think Ross Barkley as well. Is fatigue, and they've dropped him for the last couple of games.
Well, I was going to ask about Barkley, actually. Dan, it's sort of a big game for him if he does play. Is he living up to the hype? Like Pete said, you know, he has been dropped. He's just come on as a sub. He got some time for England in the international friendlies. Was too much sort of thrown on him right away? So he got that goal, didn't he? Was it the first game of the season? Or the second? And there was a lot of hype about him.
Yeah, to be fair, for England, the first time I've actually properly watched him, really, outside of the Newcastle game. But I do think that hype and overrating a player too soon is dangerous. You know, we're talking about, you know, breeding English players in the podcast a little bit later. And it seems the ones that we do seem to promote from within are just thrust into the limelight a bit too quickly, and it can be overwhelming, I think, for the player. And actually, that's was my main kind of, I say, criticism, but I guess concern for Yazahine at Man United. Again, you know, just thrust into the limelight all of a sudden, scored two goals and had a great, you know, couple of games. You know, he's going to potentially fizzle out, and I think that's exactly what's happened to Bartley, because particularly against Germany, he looked, you know, almost useless, really. I think he played one good ball, and I know he wasn't on for very long in the Germany game, but
he was too hard. That's the problem. He was trying to make an impression. I say, I'm an England player, you know, and it just sort of resolved into, I'll just run the ball and I hit someone.
Yeah.
Pete, does Barkley start on Saturday?
Yes, I think he needs to. I think he does provide a spark for Everton when he's in, and they'll need it against Liverpool, because Liverpool could just roll over them and come back.
It's good to say, actually, Everton, they're in sixth place. They're only 5 points off top. Is Martinez doing better than expected? Because, you know, in the first podcasts of this show, we were anticipating Everton to decline. We didn't really rate Martinez that highly, despite, you know, he's got an FA Cup to his name. You know, is he doing better than we all thought he would?
I think he's doing a solid job, isn't he? I mean, he's took over for Moyes, and the transition's been very smooth, hasn't it? It's one of our smoother managerial transitions this season, I think.
They are starting to move towards a style that is similar to Liverpool's in a sense, isn't it? It's a bit more possession-based. Yeah. And in the first couple of games of the season, Everton had one of the best stats for possession of the ball. With that in mind, does that make this game more exciting? Because we've now got a Liverpool team that are really starting to sort of have that Brendan Rodgers philosophy to them. And obviously you've got an Everton who look like they want to go that way. They're still probably 3 years, 4 years away from that kind of style of football. But does that make this actually a more exciting Merseyside derby rather than a grinding out a 1-0 win kind of game?
I certainly think it'll be more of a passing game than it has been in the past. And, you know, the temptation, I think, for Liverpool is to let's throw it up to Luis Suarez and see if he can score. Everton haven't got that luxury, you know, particularly as we've kind of said, Lukaku isn't quite performing in the last couple of games as he was when he opened the season with Everton, and as he did last season with West Brom. So they've got to work a little bit harder, I think, to create, you know, more stone cold chances, I think. But, you know, they're definitely passing the ball. The Crystal Palace game was evidence of that. You know, they held the majority of possession for the whole game. And I know this is Crystal Palace, but that's not particularly hard. But I think...
You can only play what's in front of you, can't you?
Yeah. I think the lack at the moment, they lack the final third and the clinical finishes.
But it's Everton, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
They've done that for a while, if they're still finishing top. I'm not sure how much of a passing game it will be myself, because... It is the Merseyside derby, and there's a tendency to get stuck in, isn't there? Mm. I'm concerned that, you know, this playing style might break down. It depends how harsh a referee is.
It does depend on ref. I don't think the managers are those kind of managers, though, Pete. I'm not sure. Martinez very much is like a strong believer in his style of play. I think Brendan Rodgers is kind of the same. Mm. So I'm not sure if the game would even have the opportunity to turn into the kind of slugfest you're talking about.
Depends on the players, though, doesn't it? And the players are roughly the same players that played for the same team for years, aren't they?
Question for you, Pete. Kenny Dalglish has come out and said he thinks, because yes, Kenny Dalglish is back in the bloody game. He's come out and says Liverpool are going to need more signings in January to sort of boost those top four hopes and sort of title hopes, and to also sort of keep Suarez at the club. Not just Liverpool need to keep Suarez, but more like Liverpool need to make more signings to show Suarez their ambition.
They have alternatives to him.
Yeah, would you agree with what Kenny's saying?
I think it depends on their expectations. If they're thinking title push, yes. Because at the moment, their squad is very much Suarez, Sturridge, Gerrard, Coutinho, and then seven other blokes sometimes. That's how it feels like. So for that, yes, for a top four place, I don't necessarily think they have to splash the cash massively.
Who do you see winning the game, Pete?
Ultimately, I think Liverpool just have a bit more class and attacking intent, so... I'll go 2-1 to the red half Merseyside.
I can't see a winner, but I can see there being goals. I'm going to go for 2-2.
Our Twitter followers are all pretty unanimous that it was going to be a Liverpool win, except for, I think, the one Liverpool fan who did tweet us, at the Shane Kinsey, who said, personally, I'd love an LFC win, being a fan and all, but I think it's going to be a draw. And he's also put a fancy hashtag on there saying, oh, hey there, fence. So the Shane Kinsey is on the fence for that game. Hopefully be a cracking game anyway to start the weekend. And be a good start for Martinez in his first derby if he can get a win. Speaking of Twitter, we've got a new sort of section for you guys. It's sort of a Twitter topic that's been brought to us by at Sophie Louise G on Twitter. You can follow her at that account. She sort of wants to get your guys' opinion on the lack of English players in the Premiership and, you know, Southampton's youth setup, and what are they doing right that other teams aren't? So I'll go to you, Dan, first, because you chatted a little bit about the pressures that we put on young English players. talking about Ollie Barkley on that occasion. But has Sophie got a point? You know, is there a real lack of English players in the Premiership? Are Southampton leading the way?
Gary Neville got close to the correct statistic, as it were.
I'm not going to trust your statistic when you can't say the word statistic.
Yeah, so he got close to the correct statistic when he was punditing for England. He said that apparently there is 26% of the Premier League is made up of English players, and that's about correct. They reckon it's between 30 to 35% of players that will play this season and that will be English. And that is, well, it's the lowest statistic in Europe, really.
Is that is that British or is that English?
English players. You know, we've got Spain, who are made up of 59% of Spanish players.
German ones, well, I'm interested in.
Germany in the Bundesliga, they're very high as well.
Germany have made steps several years ago they made changes to their league and stuff to make sure that youngsters were coming through.
Nice work.
Well, you know, pretty much their youngsters pretty much will beat what you would call a largely full-strength England team this week. So what do the FA have to do? They're doing this commission. They're saying that they might put a quota on teams, but they think that's going to go against some kind of European laws. But if other teams are doing it, other countries are doing it, do the FA need to just say, actually, this is going to be the new rules? But then how do they put that in place? Because ultimately the Premier League are a different organisation. They can tell the FA to do one on it if they want to, because Premier League has become the best league in the world because of the foreign imports. So what suffers? Do you sacrifice the quality of the league to try and boost the England team?
It's an odd conundrum, isn't it? Because then it's up to the young British players to prove themselves, and the best ones have. I still think the best young English players have sort of pushed their way to the top of the queue, haven't they?
But do they get an opportunity to play, Pete? Because ultimately, unless you're in the top eight, and this used to be in the top four, but unless you're playing for teams in the top eight, you don't get a look in at the England squad. And so I ask you, Pete, is the reason that there's not many English players playing in the Premiership because they're all taking moves to big clubs for money, they're sitting on the bench, when actually if they took a move to a lower league club, they'd be playing every week, they wouldn't be getting paid as much money, but they'd be playing every week, and the media without a doubt would be behind them getting selected, because ultimately they're moving for money and they're sacrificing their own English careers. But then at the same time, is that because they know they won't get a look in on the England team if they're playing in the bottom half of the Premier League?
It's a massive catch 22, isn't it? I mean, ultimately that's the player's decision and not the team's, really, isn't it? If a player decides to sign for a big club,
well, yeah,
I think they're going to get into a squad and it's their own lookout, isn't it? Because there are a lot of players who've sort of wasted their career sitting on the bench for whoever, aren't they? So it's an odd conundrum, really. Very much a case of players needing to, in my opinion, to be given chances for top sides. I won't mind seeing youngsters play in the League Cup or whatever, but that's not really the same. I think you look at say United, for example, and obviously like if Cleverley and Smalling and you know people are one of the England class, and I would probably argue no. But at least they'd be able to get in and play semi regularly for a top club, haven't they?
Yeah.
I mean, that allows them to then move on and play in the internationals. If they're not good enough, they wouldn't have got that far.
But yeah. Adam Lallana should have been he should have been in the English squad in September, is my opinion. I don't know if you guys agree.
Well, my argument, actually, that Walker never should have started that game. That was a game, you know, Klein, I think, should have been called up. And I actually think Shaw as well. Both have been playing really well for Southampton.
I think Shaw is behind Baines still. I think Baines will be England's number one left-back.
But Pete, yeah, Baines should be England's number one left-back already. Ashley Cole, we're going to a World Cup where no one expects us to even challenge to win it. Ashley Cole should be left behind because he's not going to be offered. What is he, 36 now or something like that?
He's early 30s, I think, but the point stands. I think that's a crucial point, actually, when I think about it. We're never willing to take the risk and do. I mean, Germany did it. I mean, was it the 2004 Euros? They finished bottom of the group, no points, no goals, and nothing. They were terrible. So let me say, to scrap it all. I mean, the 2006 World Cup was their own. We get a lot of support, and they started fresh. Klinsmann was a manager. They brought a lot of youngsters and shipped out a lot of the oldsters. Went balls deep into just going for the youth and see where it gets them. And they did pretty well. Did they finish fourth in 2006? I think they lost the third, fourth playoff. I mean, ever since then, they've been getting steadily further and further into tournaments, and it's worked for them. And I can't see it going wrong for them again next year at the World Cup. But England have never took the risk. We've always decided to keep the same old players and just the youngster every so often.
Yeah, but in those friendly games, why were we playing Baines or Cole? Why were we not trying out these youngsters who have not even had this kind of any kind of exposure at that level? At least introduce them at this point in their career. Introduce them now so that hopefully when it comes around to the next tournament or even just the next World Cup, they'll be ready for that major tournament and it won't be a case of they're being thrown into the deep end.
The way I see it is that England don't stand a hope in hell. If they even get to the quarterfinals of this World Cup, they would have defied everyone's expectations.
Yeah, I think they'd go there
expecting to even finish top of the... We don't, obviously don't know the groups, but you can't even say England are a team that are guaranteed to finish top of the group.
I can name eight teams that are better than England.
Go there with a young team, players who've never really played for England. If they don't get out of their group, at least they will have spent a month abroad at a World Cup. Brazil, probably one of the best countries to go and get that experience. So when it comes to the Euros and when it comes to the next World Cup, the next one's Russia, isn't it? So that's, it's cold, but it's going to be Europe, back in Europe. Then they've got more experience for it. Because what we keep doing is we keep saying, oh, they've got enough tournament experience, these players. You need to say, well, actually, we don't stand a fucking chance this time.
Yeah.
Let's not kid anyone. Let's just go out there, give them the experience, let them know what it's like to be in a country where there's thousands and thousands of fans from everywhere. There's, 32 countries in the World Cup, 32 teams out there. Just let them experience it. No one thinks England are going to win this World Cup. In fact, these expectations are probably the lowest.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, I don't think
it's the lowest since since before I was born, I think.
Yeah, well, the expectations have certainly never been lower in my lifetime that I know of. You know, that
apart from 94 when we didn't qualify. Just thinking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah. But then would we? I can't remember. Obviously, I can't remember about then. But were we expecting to qualify right now?
No, we'd finished in the semis at the previous World Cup.
I don't.
James Hayward, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't even think we'll get out of the group. We were lucky to qualify, and I think you're right, Pete. We've got to take take the chance and follow the mould that Germany have done, and you know, and Carl is right. You know, we've just got to bite the bullet and do it. And the media have got to get behind it as well. The media can't just sit back and criticise and put these players down, these young players, and that's the problem. And I think that's what's happened. To Wilshere, he's a classic example. We're constantly saying, and I think you tweeted it the other week, Kyle. When are we going to stop making excuses for him? You know, the only reason we're making excuses for him is because our expectations when he kind of burst on the scene was so high. You know, and I remember thinking when Capello took Walcott to the World Cup. You know, Eriksson. Yeah, it was almost like there was outrage, wasn't there, that he'd taken such a young player. This is exactly what needs to happen. It's just a shame he never actually got any game time. You know, I would take our captain, I would take Wayne Rooney,
Joe Hart,
and probably Phil Jagielka. And then I probably wouldn't take anybody over the age of 25, 26. I would try and keep it young as possible.
You know, they talk about the golden generation of English footballers, yeah? And by all rights, but for the players England had, they should have won a World Cup in 2006. And that was always the goal. You look at all the interviews from bigwigs from around 2000 onwards, they were all said they've targeted 2006 for this golden generation. Okay, superb. Didn't do it. And yet those golden generations are still around. I know Steven Gerrard I think he's been playing for 13 years now for England. And he's the kind of player who can. He's very much the Pirlo, or, you know, Zidane was around for a long time.
He's a midfield linchpin, isn't he?
But there's other players who shouldn't be. I love Frank Lampard.
He shouldn't be
in the squad anymore. He shouldn't. He shouldn't.
I've always said Ashley Cole was probably one of the best left backs in the world at his peak. But can you imagine him? That's what I mean. In his peak, but can you imagine him running around in Brazil at the age of 34?
These guys should at most have maybe a 5 to 8 year international career. At most, I shouldn't go any further than that.
It's like Jermaine Defoe's still working on the England squad. He's never been good enough and never will be. Why is he still in there?
I think the real issue is that the FA don't, and it can't just be the manager, there's got to be pressure from the FA on the manager. They don't look to the bottom half of the Premier League. If they did, more English players would be playing for those clubs.
There was a push last year for Grant Holt, wasn't it, for the same reason?
Yeah, but then look what happened. Timmy's down playing the Championship again. Players should be picked on form. I don't agree with Hodgson as his philosophy of he wants a squad of players, almost like his own team at England, and he'll keep using that same squad because it will generate consistency. I don't agree with that. I think the best players should be the players that get called up. Otherwise, what's the point of international football?
You do have to have consistency, but at the same time, you can't just come to a stop. You can't stagnate. You've got to be looking at the players that are on form, as you said. And like Curtis Davis is at the moment, has had a great season for Hull. Kolker at Cardiff has had a great season so far.
And then in the two games which were deemed as games where youngsters would get a call up, Stephen Kolker didn't even get in the squad.
No, neither did Davis. You know, this is my point. Neither of those two players, despite playing extremely well, never got a call up. Stephen Taylor, when he got picked for England or got called up to the squad, he never played the game, despite the fact that at the time he was arguably one of the best English centre backs in the league, you know, in terms of form, and that's why he was called up. But for some reason, he was never used.
Let's talk a little bit about what Sophie's asked. What are Southampton doing right with their youth setup? Because
they have the balls to do it, I think.
But they produce Shearer. We look back to Alan Shearer.
Shearer's
from the northeast. He's from Newcastle. You can't get much further away in England than Southampton. How did Alan Shearer end up in Southampton's youth setup? Gareth Bale is from Cardiff. How does he end up?
They must have a very good youth scout system, presumably going to schools, going to colleges or whatever, finding the best players in. So we have a club that give youngsters a chance, going back, like you said, to like Shearer and through the 90s, and that's why young players will sign for them, and we bring them on, and then we become sensations. I think it works. I think other teams need to start doing that, but we need to have a proof that they will play these players.
Well, I think
he belongs to the lower end of the Premiership. Yeah.
You're definitely right. I remember when my little brother was playing kind of, you know, football tournaments at school and kind of in the town and stuff like that. And they travelled to Southampton. That's where the big youth tournament was. And that's where I met Harry Redknapp and realised I don't like him. You know, he was even there. He even, you know, the manager of at the time, Southampton, you know, his manager of Southampton, took time out of his day, you know, to come down to the pitch and, you know, say hi to all the boys and stuff like that. And that's obviously what they're doing right. They obviously use those tournaments and stuff like that to highlight, you know, the next big thing. And it's obviously working because they've done it 3, 4, 5 times over in the last 10 or 10 years.
To wrap this up then, guys, because we've talked about this quite a lot, actually. It's been a very interesting debate. Do we agree that really this commission that's being done by the FA, they really need to make changes? And they need to not be afraid of pissing people off.
Yeah. They need to take it seriously. And the clubs need to take it seriously as well.
Goal of the week.
Well, my overall goal of the week won't be a Premiership goal anyway. But we'll go to that later. My actual goal for Premiership weekend was Phil Bardsley's against Man City.
Yeah, mine was the same. And I was going to say, why did you say favourite? Because it's not exactly my favourite goal. I hate him. Harsh. But he's just a thug, isn't he? And
we can also crack a football.
So but it was a beautiful goal. So
my overall goal though would be with Phil Morrison's backheel volley in training for the under-21s. Which didn't give him enough respect to actually be picked for the under-21s, so there you go.
I would have thrown him into the starting lineup against Germany for the seniors.
Other top games.
Talk about Man City against Tottenham Hotspurs even. It's quite a big game actually, because there's certain ramifications for both teams. I want to just chat about something Dembele's come out and said about Tottenham, because Dembele's actually been linked with Cardiff in January. We'll see. Dembele said in an interview that he's gone to ABB and said, why am I getting subbed and why am I not playing much? And he said that ABB said he wants more defensive players in his midfield. With that in mind, if that's true, I mean, it's coming from Dembele, I can't see why he'd lie about that in public. If that is ABB's philosophy now, does that clash with the signings he's made in the summer? Lamella, Eriksen.
The thing is, Eriksen's out injured now, isn't he, for a couple of months?
I've heard it's not quite as bad as they initially thought it might be, but yeah, I think he's out for a bit.
He's still injured for a bit, but it's an odd one because the defence is not Tottenham's issue, is it? Tottenham's signings were smattering the defensive players and attacking players. The emphasis was on the attacking players, and they haven't delivered, have they? Eriksen's been in and out, now injured. Wama was barely played. Soldado's not looked sharp enough. So I think loading up on defensive midfielders rather than you know, pushing the attacking players to actually play is a bit of an odd move, I have to say.
Well, what about Man City? You know, I think it's safe to say they deservedly lost against Sunderland. I was really impressed by Sunderland, actually, in that game. I thought they showed a real sort of steel about them. I've put in my notes, what the fuck is the excuse now for Man City? Because their away form is awful. Pellegrini can't get away from that fact now, you know. They've lost four games away from home. They've played six. They've lost four. And he came out this week and said, he doesn't think it's that their tactics are wrong away from home, but they've lost 4 out of 6 games.
Yes, they are. They're clearly wrong. I think the problem is they play exactly the same at home as they do away.
Yeah.
And you can't do that, because that's just one-dimensional in an extent. I mean, at home, we've seen what we can do. The torn teams shreds, haven't they?
Well, they've scored 20 goals.
Good teams, poor teams, it doesn't matter who, but they've been able to batter everyone pretty much. And yet, away from home, they always seem to all run sundry, like you said. I think it's a case of not being able to sort of come to terms with sides that are just going to get stuck in away from home. Because they're probably trying to just roll them over, and it's different to do that when you're visitors, because the crowd's against you, so to speak. I still think City at home are a force to be reckoned with. Above and beyond everything we've just said, so I have to go for a City win, and I've gone 2-1.
I can't see Spurs scoring, so I'm going to go for a City 2-0 win.
I've gone for a 3-1 Man City win. Even though Tottenham don't concede many goals, but I think this is Man City we're talking about. You know, they've put 4 past United, 3 past Everton, 4 past Newcastle, 7 past Norwich. You know, they can't even think what was
you can't class Norwich
and Hull. They put 2, I think they put 2 passes in there.
Speed predictions.
Pete, I'll start with you. Go game by game if you just want to give me a score. Fulham against Swansea.
2-0 Swansea.
Hull against Palace.
1-0 Hull.
Newcastle against Norwich.
3-0 Newcastle.
Stoke against Sunderland.
Can't believe I'm saying this, but 1-0 Stoke.
West Ham against Chelsea.
1-0 Chelsea.
Cardiff against Man United.
2-1 United.
Boo. Boo. West Brom Villa.
2-1 West Brom.
Dan, Fulham against Swansea.
Swansea 1-0.
Hull against Palace.
Hull 3, Palace 1.
Norwich against Newcastle.
Newcastle 2, Norwich 0.
Stoke Sunderland.
Stoke 2, Sunderland 1.
West Ham Chelsea.
Chelsea 3-0.
Cardiff against Man United.
I went for the same as Pete, 2-1.
You guys have no faith. You did this when we played Man City, though. So, West Brom against Villa.
Ball draw.
We're going to go to a Twitter topic that was brought to us by at AMS Memorabilia. You can follow them at that handle. Basically, going by the name, they sort of wanted us to sort of chat about sports memorabilia, so we're just going to keep it to football stuff now, because at AMS Memorabilia have their own website, which is amssportingmemorabilia.co.uk, where they sell all sorts of lower league memorabilia. Is it anything you guys own, which is like, which you'd classify as memorabilia? Something important?
I do have a book with pens. Obviously, we also exchanged it at the kickoff.
Oh, yeah.
The ones that were signed, yeah.
How do you get those?
I was given them by one means or another, I think, for birthdays or whatever. So, hanging up, we tried to place them in the room. That's probably the closest I've come to anything like that.
Dan?
I used to have some programs. I think I probably do still have them, for where I visited away games. Because obviously living nowhere near Newcastle, I visited very few games at St James's Park in my lifetime. But whenever they came local-ish, I would always go. And I, as a kid, for some reason, our school always used to go to watch Villa for some reason, bizarrely. So I've still got those programs. I think Derby, Fulham, a couple of other sides that I saw at Villa Park. That seems very strange. I suppose, can you count programmes as memorabilia? I don't know. Yeah, and obviously all my old shirts that obviously don't fit me anymore because they're for children. they're in the loft somewhere. So I've still got those. Not signed or anything, but they have their own kind of value to me anyway.
I've got all my old football shirts, same as you. They're actually my wife. I've still got them in my bottom drawer. My wife told me she wanted me to vacuum pack them this week and put them in the attic. And I was like, "Well, what if I want to show them to someone?" And she's like, "Who are you gonna show a Newcastle away shirt from 15 years ago to?" And I said, "You never know. Yeah, I might just want to get out and show someone I've got this top. And I've got a lot of programs. I've got actually Cardiff special promotion winning program from last year. I've actually been looking into collecting all their programs from the Premiership season because obviously even the games I'm not at, you can buy." Programs online. I did consider going down to the stadium each week anyway, just to go to the program stand, but to grab the program. I've got hanging up on my wall in the hallway. I've got one of the signed photos, the team photos of Cardiff hanging up. It's not the promotion-winning photo, but it's just the squad. But I was only a tenner on their website. I probably don't have enough memorabilia. I'd quite like to collect more. Is there anything you'd love to have, Dan? Something that you just would love to be able to say you own it.
Probably.
Alan Shearer's underwear, is it?
No, probably the ball Beckham kicked against Greece.
What about you, Pete? I mean, obviously you've got your coins. That's pretty impressive already, but
I don't know, to be honest. I've seen picking sort of scaled down versions of statues. Obviously, the statues outside Old Trafford, that sort of thing.
I'd like the World Cup.
The actual World Cup,
and I feel like I want it to be signed by Pele. Well, I think that's my dream. So AMS sportingmemorabilia.co.uk.
Get him the World Cup.
Yeah, get me the World Cup signed by Pele, please.
Fantasy football.
It's getting very close at the top now. Stephen Turner, who you can actually follow on Twitter, on the handle at StephenTurner14. He's in first place with a total of points of 598. But then only 5 points behind him is JT Vaughan, who you can follow at JT Vaughan. And then 1 point behind him in third place is Tom Howe, who you can follow. It's hard to explain this on Twitter. You can follow at Tom Howe Howie. There's four E's on the end of that, guys. I will put it in the description of the podcast if you do want to follow him. So that's the top three, but then you've got Carl Bungo, who's in fourth. He's on 587, so he's only 11 points off first place. Dan, you're in fifth spot on 583. So theoretically, out of that top five, any one of you could be top come Monday, after Monday's game. Pretty much rounds up this week's show. You can find our episodes on iTunes by searching for The Bootiful Game, and we're first choice in the podcast section. We also do general releases through another website, which we'll tweet about. You can follow us on Twitter on the account @soccer_podcast, or you can follow us on our individual accounts. I'm available on @KyleThomasWest. Dan, what is your Twitter handle?
Mine is @DTT2409921. Nice
and easy. Switch to his pin.
No one's going to follow Dan then. just for that Twitter handle. And Pete, if anyone wants to follow you, where should they go?
Pete Egaskell. Simple as that.
Fantastic. Right, thank you very much for this week's show, guys. If you ever want to be on this show, please just contact us via our Twitter account, and if you have any questions for us or just want to chat to us throughout the week, please get in touch. And if you have any suggestions for something you wanted us to talk about on a future show, just send it in. We've done it this week. I think we had a great debate from one that was sent in by @SophieLouiseG. I think you'd all agree in the podcast now that was a really good chat about England, and we got to talk about some memorabilia as well, and that was all from you guys. So please chip in with your ideas, and I guarantee you we will fit them into the show, because ultimately the show is for you guys. So thank you very much, and we'll see you next week for next week's show.
The Bootiful Game, a podcast from the Compass Network.